And it is the History Quiz here on WLRN. Hearing Kelly Mitchell talk about Doral. Do you know how the term Doral was created?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Why don't you ask Dr. George?
Name. It was Dorothy and Albert, somebody.
Oh, that's right. That's
Al Haskell who created Doral.
And so that's how Doral came about.
So the hotel itself and the country club.
Right. Well, it's the History Quiz. Dr. Paul George, you just heard him. He's in the studio. Paul and I will ask history questions, naturally. And Bonnie Berman is our question tracker as well as co-host today. And we'll also be commenting on our history quiz. And between Paul and me, probably the only sensible voice that's going on. So here's the lay of the land of the quiz. Dr. George and I pose history questions. And if you have answers, call us at 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. Now, you must correctly answer a question to ask one. Please, no freelance questions to Dr. George. Don't make me the bad guy that has to cut off the people that want to ask questions when they didn't get a question right. So we'll begin right away with a question from the good doctor, Paul George. It's always good to see you. It's been about 7 or 8 months since I saw you,
Paul. It has been. Good to be back, John. Good to see you and Bonnie.
Yes,
again.
It's really good to be doing this and have Joe here doing it.
Absolutely. Let me ask a question then regarding a very interesting family. They forced both Henry M. Flagler and Frank Stranahan to relocate the railroad right-of-way in an overnight camp that Stranahan was running, respectively, because each of these items would have breached their property near the New River in Fort Lauderdale. Who was this family, this land-rich family?
And what number was that?
Question two.
Why don't you ask another, Paul, so we get plenty out on the table before we take calls.
Oh, how about this question, number five? Coconut Grove's first school teacher, first woman homesteader, and a founder of St. Stephen's Episcopal Church. Who was this person?
And there's a street name.
There's a street name for her that runs pretty much in the heart of Coconut Grove.
That kind of is a good hint.
Well, I think of her.
I would even get with that hint.
It's a very generous hint, actually.
Yes, it is.
Okay. How about if you can name Miami's first black...
What number?
Millionaire. That's number seven. Miami's first African-American millionaire. A replica of his home is on Northwest 9th Street and 2nd Avenue. Very close to us here at WLRN. Miami's first black millionaire. And also staying with Miami, we'll get to some Broward and Palm Beach questions as well. A seafood joint on the Miami River at North River Drive. I went there many times. I'm sure Paul did also. It opened in 1926 as Miller's Fish Market. In 1933, it changed its name to another one. As a wholesale fish market and a restaurant. It was popular until forced to close in 1999. The name of that seafood joint on the Miami River at North River Drive. How about our telephone numbers, Bonnie?
Okay, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. We're not going to take emails today. But one thing about your question about Miami's first black millionaire, do you want to give the century and the decade, or just leave that open?
No, I don't think we need to do
right,
that.
Right, he was a pioneer. He came here early on in the city's history.
Didn't he also own one of the islands?
He owned a very prominent island of today.
What is now very prominent.
Very prominent today.
Was it Fisher Island, wasn't it?
Right, Fisher Island, and he had property in the Bahamas, too.
Quite an influential figure.
Right. Started from scratch completely.
Okay. And will you have someone who wants to answer that question about the Miami's first black millionaire, Chaz in Coral Gables. Hi there.
Hey, hi there. All right, let's go with James L. Knight. Crossing fingers.
I don't believe James L. Knight was African American.
I'm not.
Okay. Thank you for your call. Again, the number, Bonnie?
1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN.
And Paul has two questions open.
two questions, and so do you. Yours is the Seafood Joint on the Miami River at North River Drive, opened in 1926, changed its name in 1933.
When I used to go there, I used to wonder how often the health inspector was around that place.
Well, I think that city officials did too, and they closed it in the spring of 99 during a late lunch. It was shut down.
So the people had to just pack up and...
They did. Allegedly more than 50 violations, code violations.
Okay, and Dr. George's questions, Coconut Grove's first school teacher, first woman homesteader, and a founder of St. Stephen's Episcopal Church. And this family forced Henry Flagler and Frank Stranahan to relocate the railroad right-of-way and overnight camp because it would have breached their property near the New River in Fort Lauderdale.
And back to the phones. Paul, look ahead to see if we can skip some of the breaks also. We'll see if we can do that. Sam in Kendall. Hi, Sam. How you doing?
I'm doing right fine. Nice to have you back, Joe.
Thank you.
Real simply, the one about the fish. The answer is Florida East Coast Fisheries.
That's right.
All right.
And I couldn't get my computer to think of to look up the question I wanted to ask, so we'll just let it pass. It's always a pleasure to participate.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Good job.
Bye-bye.
I guess you ate there before.
Oh, on occasion.
Okay, very good.
Bye-bye.
And let's see, Anna, she has the answer to the restaurant on the river. Of course, and she's just gotten off the line. That's the nice thing to do. And let's go to... Ira in Miami, she's going to answer one of Paul's questions. Ira, hi. Or he.
Hi. Welcome back, Joe.
Thank you.
Nice to hear your voice. So I knew the Florida East Coast, but I'm guessing that the last name of the teacher was McFarlane.
Yes. Flora McFarlane. And, of course, that road that runs right along Peacock Park is named for her.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured. It was a generous clue.
Yeah.
I'm curious. There was a music spot right in the center of Coconut Grove. I believe the Tom Thumb restaurant, which is also long gone, replaced it, and I think the name was the Grove Pub. Can you tell me about that and what years it was open?
Well, I'm not familiar with that. There was the Lamplighter.
It was on 27th Avenue, wasn't it? The old Grove Pub.
Oh,
no,
you mean,
no, right in the center where Virginia Street runs into.
Oh, okay.
I guess at that point it's Grant.
Well, there was the Lamplighter. That's what I'm real familiar with. Everybody from the local singer to Donovan, the British singer, appeared there, and a lot in between. But I'm not familiar with was it the Grove Club? Is that what you mentioned?
I thought it was called the Grove Pub. The location is correct. So maybe it was the Lamplighter.
It may have been.
A lot of folk heroes.
A lot of folk singing. Vince Martin was a local. He was real prominent there. And it just attracted a lot of pretty heavy people from throughout the country who would, when they came down, because Coconut Grove was really the epicenter of music and a lot of entertainment at that time.
Right. That was the period when the bus radio station was alive and well.
Did you know that Ed Bell was a DJ on the bus?
I don't.
Yeah,
I know Ed Bell, and we could ask him. But
he was.
However, it was the Lamplighter.
Well, that's what I'm thinking of. That's what I'm thinking of. But again, there may have been, as you mentioned, the Grove Pub or Club, and there were a lot of little bars there. Some did have, you know, live music. We're talking going back at least as far as the early 60s, all the way through the 60s into the 70s.
Right. I arrived here in 76, and that was kind of when that area or that hub, I guess, was closing down.
Okay, we have to run.
Live music. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure listening to you. Bye.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Ira. Paul, why don't you add one more since they got yours?
Yeah, well, let's stay in Broward County for a moment. This question, owing to its packing houses and railroad link, this Broward municipality was the hub of the county's flourishing produce industry as late as the middle decades of the 20th century. So we want to name the city that was so closely associated with the really rich agricultural industry in Broward County.
And Joe, you need another one.
Okay.
That's number one.
Yeah, they got the seafood place. How about my number 11? WPLG Channel 10 has a very interesting history. Its call letters were WLBW in 1969 when it was purchased by Catherine Graham. What does the PLG of WPLG stand for? What does the PLG in the call letters of Channel 10, WPLG, stand for? And let's see, first come, first served, we have Verna. She's in Miami. Hi. Verna, go ahead.
Oh, the answer to the first black millionaire is D.A. Dorsey.
Dana Albert Dorsey. Tell us a little bit about him, Paul.
Well, he came down from Quitman, Georgia. Miami was incorporated in 1896. He was down either that year or the year after with the proverbial $5 in his pocket. And he was lured down by the railroad. But every penny he could save, he saved, and he invested in real estate. And there's a very similar story going on in Coconut Grove with the Reverend Ebenezer Stirrup from the Bahamas. And both of them, through their land, through their development, through their rents, became millionaires and huge benefactors of their communities. And Dorsey was a very visible figure. He owned Fisher Island. He owned property in the Bahamas. It was said that on Sundays, in a horse-drawn carriage, he would go around and collect rents throughout his properties in what was then called Colored Town, today's Overtown.
What did he do with Fisher Island? When did he sell it?
Well, he wanted to establish a beach and resort there for African-American visitors. And it did go on in that scope for just a couple of years. And then he sold it at the end of the teens, beginning of the 20s, to Carl Fisher, who in turn traded most of it for the yacht of one of the Vanderbilts, William K. Vanderbilt II. In 1927. Fisher by then was pretty much into his cups and was not making wise decisions. But it remained undeveloped in the sense of we know development until the 1980s.
Verna, do you have a question for us? Verna?
Oh, I'm sorry. What is it?
Do you have a question for us?
No, I just wanted to compliment Professor George on all the outstanding things that he does.
Well, thank you.
We do too. We'll echo that.
Yes. We
yes,
do.
Okay,
thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Okay. Next up, we go to, do we need to go to a break?
Do we?
Well, let's take this call, then do the break, because
okay.
I've already punched her up. Brittany in Hollywood, hi.
Hi.
Hello. Ooh. Go ahead, Brittany.
Well, she answered my question.
All right.
So, she came up with the answer for the question, but I do have a question.
Well, but you didn't
like
get.
I didn't.
Okay,
I didn't.
Okay. Well, because
She did get it. She got it right. She just didn't get an opportunity to say it.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
So the question I have is Broward's first black doctor, and he was born in Midway, Florida, and he also has an area in Broward County named after him.
Sistrunk.
Yay!
Very good. And boy, I tell you, Joe was quicker than I on that.
I actually knew that, which is amazing.
Detective,
good question, Brittany.
I think it's one of my
Thank
questions.
You.
That was so quick, Joe. I didn't have a chance to say anything.
That was very quick.
What
I guess
his
I gave
first
too
name,
many
Paul?
Clues.
Can't remember, but
not
Sistrunk
Otis,
Boulevard.
Not Otis, though.
No.
Sistrunk Boulevard, though, is certainly named for him.
That is it.
Yes.
His first name is James.
James Sistrunk.
Okay.
That's
right.
Terrific. That's
okay,
great.
Brittany, well, thanks for listening.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Brittany.
Bye-bye.
It's the Topical bye-bye. Currents History Quiz. We'll take a short break and be back with more calls.
Welcome back to the South Florida History Quiz on WLRN Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman, thrilled to have Joseph Cooper and Dr. Paul George here. And the deal is you answer the question, you get to ask one. Okay, so we still have outstanding question, just one from Joe. WPLG Channel 10, what are the call letters stand for?
PLG.
The PLG. Mm-hmm. Yes, we know the W. What do PLG stand for? And you need another one, Joe.
Okay. How about, in fact, I did have James Sistrunk as one of my questions. Let me scratch that out there. Let's continue with South Florida television history. In 1967, WTVJ, which of course now is NBC6, became the first station in the U.S. to have a female sportscaster. Name that woman. WTVJ, 1967.
What number is this?
This is number 18. The first female sportscaster.
Oh.
And she was very good. How about more calls? We've got Robert. We have the first millionaire. That was Dorsey. Let's go to Juan in Hollywood. Hi, Juan. How you doing?
Good afternoon. The initials WPLG stands for Philip L. Graham.
That's right. Very good.
Good.
Now, who was Philip L. Graham? Can you place him in the Graham family?
Yes, he was the publisher of the Washington Post, and Catherine married him.
Catherine's husband was the original publisher, and then he ceded it to Philip Leslie Graham, Catherine's husband.
And correct.
Catherine's, of course, Phyllis Leslie Graham is the half-brother of former Florida Governor and Senator Bob Graham.
I have a question for Dr. George.
Okay. Yes, uh-huh.
About a week or so ago, I listened to the interview of the Deep City Music Studios here
right.
in Miami.
Right, uh-huh.
It was very interesting. And one of the gentlemen made a comment that I found surprising and, frankly, hard to believe. So I'll put it to the test here, Dr. George. He described a wall that ran from 62nd Street along 12th Avenue all the way to 79th Street. Sounded to me like it sounded a little bit like a Berlin Wall type of barrier to separate one neighborhood from the other. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
It was true. It ran from 62nd, a little bit past 75th, on the west side of Northwest 12th Avenue. And it went up, we believe, at the end of the 1930s, which was just a couple years after Liberty Square opened as a public housing project in what we call Liberty City today. And the foundation of that wall, and if you have a chance, I would encourage you to take a peek at it or just go online. You can see the foundation of much of the wall is still standing, beginning at about 63rd Street and moving up to maybe 73rd or 75th Street. And what it did was it separated by a wall. They were already separated by Jim Crow. The west side of 12th Avenue, which was African-American, from the east side, which was white. And there was a second wall that's still standing in Coconut Grove that runs right through the center of a block that's framed on one side by Charles Avenue. That went up in 1948, which is shocking how late that went up, which underlines the fact that Miami was a deeply segregated southern city in that respect.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Thank you. Wait, we have to do Dr. George's questions.
Oh, okay.
Okay. We are still looking for the family that forced both Henry Flagler and Frank Stranahan to relocate the railroad right-of-way and the overnight camp because it breached their property near the New River in Fort Lauderdale. Who was that family? It's a very prominent family. And the other question, owing to its packing houses and railroad link, this Broward municipality was the hub of the county's flourishing produce industry. So we need the name of that Broward municipality.
I have a caller who wants to answer that. However, we have four callers, Brad, Ron, Keith, and Al, who want to answer the call letter question. We already had that, the WPLG question, Philip L. Graham. If you'd like to join in, Bonnie, how about a number?
It's 800-743-9576, 800-743-9576.
We have some lines open. Now would be a great time to call if you'd like. Andy in Fort Lauderdale, you're up. Hi.
Good afternoon. The family that relocated the FEC and Frank Stranahan's overnight camp, I believe, were the Brickles.
Yes.
All right.
Correct.
And we live on Victoria Park Road, and had that not happened, our lot would be a rail yard today.
Yeah, that's probably true, too. That's probably true. Just to give you, to show you the impact of that, when the Brickles pushed Flagler, who obviously had very, very deep pockets, to move that railroad, the railroad comes straight in the direction of what would be Tarpon Bend on the New River, the Florida East Coast Railway, as it was being laid out in 1895-96. And then it jags for about 2+ miles west, and then it moves south again across the New River, right on the western edge of today's downtown Fort Lauderdale. Well, that was the move of the Brickles to force that railroad's right-of-way to change that dramatically.
Hmm. And do you have a question for us, Andy?
Yes, I do. There used to be a bar on South Andrews Avenue, Brownies. It had the oldest liquor license, surviving liquor license in Fort Lauderdale, and it had pictures of Count Basie, Ella Fitzgerald, Duke Ellington, and I understand that back during Jim Crow, these great entertainers could not be out on the beach at the hotels after sunset, So they'd go back to Brownies to play on the mainland.
Well, there were other night spots like that, too. Now, they likely performed on the beach, especially in the case of Miami Beach, at night. But after their performance, they had to leave, in the case of Miami Beach, and many of them came
to play. What a day we're talking.
Pardon me? Fort Lauderdale Beach. Well, it's the same principle because of a segregation. So they had to leave the beach after the performance. And in the case of Miami, they went to places like the Ball and Chain, which is now reopened on Cayocho.
Sir John also.
Or the Sir John they went to in what was then called Color Tantes Overtown. I'm aware of Brownies. I've been in Brownies. That likely could have been a place, too. And you mentioned two of the people that we know performed at the Ball and Chain and likely performed in Overtown, Billie Holiday and Count Basie, as late as the 1950s, 57 or so. They were performing in parts of White Miami after hours, but couldn't be on the beach once they had finished a performance there.
Right. Paul, we need a question from you.
Okay.
And from you.
You know, it's been such a long time since I've been here that I'm so long-winded today, which is very atypical, of course.
Like an encyclopedia.
Well, thanks. How about this question number 9? This Miami Beach developer bought the Fontainebleau Hotel out of bankruptcy in the late 1970s. Who is this person?
Okay, and Joe has a question out. In 1967, WTVJ, now NBC6, became the first TV station in the country to have a female sportscaster, a woman sportscaster, if you please.
We've got some people who want to answer that.
Okay.
And my next question is, what was the original name of I-95 through Dade County?
What
number
is that?
Name, that's number 19 of I-95 through Dade County. I always enjoy talking to young people and telling them when I first moved here, I-95 had a grass median. Can you imagine that?
How about the Palmetto Expressway, where you had to stop at intersections
right
before the bridges?
And it ended at 103rd Street.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Let's take a sportscaster, the female sportscaster. Let's go to a woman to answer that. This is Rosa in Miami. Hi.
Is that me? Is that Rosa?
Are you you?
Yes. Is Jane Chastain?
Yes.
Very good.
Yes. Very good.
Very good.
And the family who bought that Fontainebleau, can I answer that too?
I'll leave it up to to Joe, Mr. Cooper.
Well, you know, Bonnie is the
Bonnie, you're the voice of arbiter reason and the voice of reason.
I say yes, Rose. Who was it?
Let me try. I'm not sure, but was it the Novak family?
Yeah.
No.
What was it? Who?
Novak.
The Novaks.
No. See, it was bought out of bankruptcy. They're the folks that had it and then lost it
they
because
built
of bankruptcy.
It.
Yeah, they built it.
But, Rose, you still get to ask a question because you did get one right, Jane Chastain.
No, I don't have any questions. I pretty much follow Dr. George. So I'm very versed about Miami history. Well versed about
Miami that's
history.
Great. Okay,
very
well,
good.
Thanks.
That's great, Rosa.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
We have Keith and Al. They're still up on the board wanting the call letters. We got that question. Keith, I'll assume that you have another question you want to try and answer. I hope I'm right. Keith in Miami.
Question.
Hi.
Yes, I have another question I want to answer, and I want to ask, I guess, their question, too.
Well, answer one first, then you get to ask.
Okay. What's the question?
No.
We thought you had.
Okay, what was the original?
I do have a question. Okay, here it is.
Well, no, we can't do that. You have to answer a question first.
Okay.
Otherwise, other people are waiting online.
No problem. I'll answer the question. What's the question?
Okay, what was the original name of I-95 through Dade County? Do you know that?
Wow. The 95 Expressway?
No, Expressway was in the name, but that's not correct.
Okay,
give us 95. an update.
Well, on we only have two questions out. The original name of I-95 through Dade County, and that is your question. And
Paul, why don't
Paul's
you
question
answer.
Is the your Miami
your
Beach
number
developer.
11 also is kind of interesting.
Yes, it is, because we're observing a 50th anniversary. In fact, History of Miami has a big Beatles exhibition coming very soon. Question 11, among the Beatles stops during their celebrated 8 days in Miami in February of 1964 was a famous bar and a famous hotel. Name the bar.
They don't need to name the hotel?
Well, they could do that, too. That would be okay. Kind of a two-prong answer. Okay. They're liable to answer the hotel if they name the bar. Yes, yes. Bonus.
I think I spent a little time at that bar. I think not in the 60s. But,
yeah.
Okay, Joe, you need another question.
Okay. What was the original name of the city of Miami Springs? Hmm. The original name of the city of Miami Springs, of course, it was founded by Glenn Curtis and James Bright, as was Hialeah and Opa-locka.
Where is that?
The original name of
number 20.
The city of Miami Springs, 20.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we'll, let's see, John, we have the, did we get the Fontainebleau question?
We no, haven't we answered didn't. It yet.
Okay. No. John has the answer. John, you're up.
Hi. I think Steve bought the Fontainebleau out of bankruptcy.
That's right.
Steve, who?
Must.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got it right.
Okay.
Do you have a question?
Why in the mid-80s, when Steve Must was head of the Convention Bureau, did he forbid photographs south of 15th Street on Miami Beach for advertising purposes?
Well, I don't know if it was 15th, and I didn't know about the forbidding, but the area from 6th Street to the tip was a moratorium area on any development or sales because, and this really begs another one of my questions, Miami Beach wanted to redevelop it into still another Venice of America, and so everything had come to a halt from 6th South as of the late 1970s, and that wasn't lifted till into the 1980s.
Bonnie, we have some lines open. It would be a good time to call in.
Okay, it's 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. But we need more questions. We have outstanding the original name of I-95 through Dade County and the original name of the city of Miami Springs. Those are yours, Joe. And what we have from you, Paul, among the Beatles stops during their celebrated 8 days in Miami in February 64 was a famed bar in a famous hotel named The Bar. We need another question from you.
Okay. In the middle decades of the 20th century, this park was the tennis center of Dade County. It hosted such luminaries as Gardner Malloy and even at one point Bobby Riggs. Please name the park, and a hint is it's within the confines of the city of Miami.
Okay, so it's a tennis center in the confines, within the city of Miami.
Right.
Confines within the city of Miami.
Okay. And we have Jerry in South Miami. Hi.
Hello?
Jerry, you're up.
Yeah, I think the bar was the Rick Bar in the Castaways.
You got it.
That's it. He got the hotel and the bar.
Oh, my God, that's great. He probably was a visitor to both.
I've been there a couple of times.
Congratulations.
You don't have to confess, Jerry. It's okay.
No, it was a wonderful place.
Yeah. Yes. Do you have a question?
Yeah, okay. In the late 40s, early 50s, 49, 50, 51, when WTVJ was the only television station in Miami, they had what was probably the first reality courtroom television show done live. What was the name of the show?
Oh, boy, I could rattle off some shows, but Jack of All Sports and Alec Gibson. And
No.
This wasn't
a sports program. This was a courtroom
show. Gotcha. No, I don't know. I'd be curious to know, though.
It was a Court of Junior Pleas, P-L-E-A-S.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh.
And I was one of the kids that was on it. We very loosely rehearsed. There were two sides. Kids were suing their parents or vice versa. One parent didn't want her daughter to smoke. A kid wanted a box, and his mother didn't want him to. And we had lawyers on both sides. There were 12 students who were all high school kids were in the jury box. Nobody knew anything until we actually went on the air live.
Well, that's marvelous.
That's
I had no idea. That is marvelous.
It was a lot of fun. It really was.
Well, that's great. It's quite remote, but boy, it's fascinating.
Okay, Al. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We move along to Bob, South Miami. South Miami, Bob, you're up. Hi.
Hey, good afternoon. I-95 question. I believe it was called the North-South Expressway.
Very good.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
How about the Dolphin or the 836? What was its original name? I mean, it makes sense.
It makes sense. It's really easy.
Airport Expressway. No, that's 112.
It,
I don't know.
It's right in keeping with your last answer.
Just going the west. Other direction.
East, west.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I don't have a question for you because I drew a blank. So next time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank
okay.
you.
Thanks for your call. Where are we, Bonnie?
Okay, Joe, you have the original name of the city of Miami Springs out, and that's all.
That's the only one I have, yeah.
Yes. So do you want to ask another?
Okay. Considering all varsity sports, which University of Miami coach has the highest winning percentage in Hurricane history? Once again, considering all varsity sports, which University of Miami coach has the highest winning percentage in Hurricane history?
I know what that is. What you're saying is it's not football. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying considering all varsity sports.
Okay. And Paul, you need another question, too.
Of course.
Depends what is means.
Yeah. My question is number 12. This delightful lady instituted in the early 1970s the lively lunchtime musical series on the steps of the Dade County Courthouse to awaken a somnolent downtown quarter.
Mm.
Who is she?
Great question.
I knew her.
Yeah, me too.
And let's go to Al in Miami. Hi.
Al, how about going to Al?
This is. Go ahead.
Hello?
Hello.
Finally?
Finally.
Okay. Did someone answer the question about Broward County, the produce center?
No, not yet.
Okay. I'm going to go for Pompano Beach.
That's
all right.
Great.
That's good.
That's great. Terrific.
Okay. And the UM coach, would that be Ron Fraser?
No. Good question. Nope. Good guess, though.
Okay. Well, I answered one correctly. Do I get a question?
Oh, yes.
Okay. We're all familiar in Miami with 88 Southwest 88th Street, which is known as North Kendall Drive. Actually, I learned several years ago that Southwest 104th Street is actually South Kendall Drive. Why has it never been known as popularly as South Kendall Drive?
Well, you know, there's really no explanation why, but you're 100% correct. That is South Kendall Drive. But it just hasn't been called that. As that area developed, it just kind of went way beyond. If it was called that at one point, it was soon forgotten because development continued along that all the way out west in the direction of Chrome Avenue. So it was largely forgotten if it was ever used. But you're right about that. That is South Kendall Drive.
Joe, you need another question. The only question
of
the original name of the city of Miami Springs, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN.
And I still have the University of Miami.
Oh, yes, the University
of Miami.
Varsity
coach, the one with the highest winning percentage. Okay, in 1943, what state legislator introduced the proposal to create Florida International University?
What number is that?
Number 12. The state legislator, he was from Dade County, introduced the proposal to create Florida International University. Mm. Who owns that distinction?
And
where are we with Paul?
Paul has, in the middle of the decades of the 20th century, this park was the tennis center of Dade County, hosting such luminaries as Gardner Malloy and even Bobby Riggs. And this delightful lady instituted in the early 70s the lively lunchtime musical series on the steps of the Dade County Courthouse.
Very good.
You
want another one? I'm not sure whether that tennis one is anybody's going to get that.
Well, you know, it's so remote now. It's so tucked away. But, boy, it had its day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, ask another question just in case.
Okay. Before there was a Miami Design District, this is question 13, there was a blank. Now, it's kind of a loaded question. Where the Design District is today had a previous name related to design, but it also had a larger name that goes back even farther than that we've largely forgotten. So I'll help the caller along with this if somebody does call in.
Okay. And we move along to Ray in Miami. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
I thought we got, there was a click. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Okay, my dear friend who started the Downtown Lunch series, Ruth Greenfield.
Yes.
Yes.
Very good.
And her son Charles does pieces for Ed Bell on South Florida Arts Beat, covering the classical music scene.
Right, and Timothy is a well-known photographer, her other son.
Right.
We went to high school together.
Oh,
that's terrific.
On Miami Beach. My question is, what was the name of the junior high school that I went to on Drexel on Miami Beach next to the old Miami Beach High?
Right. Idem Fisher?
Yep.
Great.
All right.
Very good.
I couldn't have gotten that, but I remember driving by it.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Ray.
Yeah, by the way, before I go, I just have to mention that it was Espanola Way in those days before it became Española Way.
Very good. Nobody
ever said Espanola Way.
Right.
Okay.
Dolly's Ice Cream.
Yeah, right. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
And Susan, North Miami, hi.
Hi. The senator who suggested FIU in 1943 was Ernest Graham.
Wow.
Good.
Good.
Father of whom?
Robert.
Right. What was his nickname?
This seems to be the Graham family show today.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And do you know do you know his nickname?
No.
Ernest Graham?
I might recognize it if I hear it, but I don't know it.
Cap.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Cap Graham.
Okay. Do you have a question?
No, I don't. I'll just continue to listen.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
And let's see. Line three is Sam. We got the I-95 question. It was the North-South Expressway. If you want to answer another one, you can hang on and I'll get to you. We'll go to line six, George Hialeah. Hialeah, George, hi.
Yes, sir. I want to answer the question about the tennis tennis park.
Right.
My guess is Moore.
No, although that is a very important tennis facility. There was one, actually, that I don't know if you could really rank them, but it was considered certainly more famous and probably more important, and that would be south of there.
Uh-huh. I don't know that, but I want to ask an Elvis Presley question.
Did he answer one? No, we have to move along.
Okay.
Okay, wait. Now we need more questions, Joe. You only have the original name of the city of Miami Springs.
Name the late jazz legend. He was an alto saxophonist who was the band director at Fort Lauderdale's Dillard High from 1948 through 1950. Very well known.
I didn't know that.
In the history of jazz. The jazz legend, he was played alto sax and was the band director at Fort Lauderdale's Dillard High.
No idea about that.
We also have Steve now in Fort Lauderdale. He wants to talk about Miami Springs.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I believe it was Country Club Estates.
Yes.
Very, very good.
Yeah.
All right. I don't have a question, but I really enjoy the show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for your call.
Okay, all Joe, right. You need another question.
All right.
All you have now is the late jazz legend, the alto saxophonist, who was band director at Fort Lauderdale's Dillard High from 48 to 50.
Okay. Well, I'll put this question up, and then we'll take the break. I'm getting messages from the control room.
Messages from beyond.
Let's see. Let's go back to some real history, some old history. Since Florida was explored by Europeans, it has flown under the flags of three nations: Spain, Britain, and the United States. What famous treaty returned Florida to Spain in 1783? What was the name of the treaty that returned Florida to the Spaniards in 1783? I'm only off a couple hundred years.
Okay, so we have to take our break before you take that call, and then Paul's questions, Dr. George. In the middle of the 20th century, this park was the tennis center of Dade County, hosting people like Bobby Riggs. And your other question is, before there was a Miami Design District, there was, what was it called?
Right.
Okay. So we'll take a short break. Okay.
You're coming back with a cackle, Bonnie. What's so funny?
You. Enough said.
Okay. How about some more calls? Let's see. Sam and Kendall, he wanted to talk about I-95, but we got that, so he stayed on. So that means he wants another try at another question.
Yeah,
is that correct, Sam? Thank you.
I do have a question about that, but I think I can also answer about the Miami Design District, which is known as Buena Vista.
The true. That was the homesteading neighborhood that begins to emerge in the late 19th century. And you're 100% correct. See, it's kind of a vague question. And what I wanted to do is also give you another name for the immediate area known as the design district today. It was known earlier as Decorator's Row. And it began with the opening in 1926 of the Moore Furniture Building. But you're right. You're 100% right.
Yeah. The question, if I may ask, the question about the Miami Expressway. I don't know that North-South Expressway and East-West, although I remember them both when they were new, were ever official. When did the 95 become the William D. Singer Expressway? And, of course, Bill Singer was the chairman of Royal Castle, I think, the first chairman of the Expressway Authority.
He was all of those things. And North-South, if it wasn't official, was clearly the unofficial name of the part of I-95 that runs through Dade County today, all the way well into the 1960s, probably through the 60s. Singer, by the state legislature, his name was affixed to that part of 95 that runs through southern Broward and I believe northern Dade County. And that's a relatively recent phenomenon, I'd say within the last 20 years. And there was a lot of controversy about that, too, about putting his name on that. But be that as it may, it's codenamed for him in that part of it. I'd say within the last 20 years.
Okay, before we get into too big of a time crunch, Bonnie, where are we?
We just have one question from Paul, and I think from you, one. Okay, Paul's is in the middle
director.
Decades of the 20th century. It's the park that was the tennis center of Dade County. That's your only question. And Joe, your only question, name the late jazz legend, an alto saxophonist who was band director at Fort Lauderdale's Dillard High, very famous from 1948 to 1950.
Okay, we have a couple of callers for that, but Paul, why don't you add one?
Yeah, I'd like to. Question number 18. What was the great Satchel Paige's contribution to the Miami Marlins' victory in perhaps the only baseball game played in the Orange Bowl, played in August of 1956? What did he do in terms of a performance in that game?
Okay, and Joe, you want one more question?
Let's see how we go with what we've got on the board.
Okay.
Let's see. Line two has precedence. Bill, North Miami. Hi.
Hi. Julian Cannibal Adderley died of a stroke, world-famous alto saxophonist, and can be found on Miles Davis's album Kind of Blue, amongst other recordings he did himself as well as with Miles, which is the largest-selling jazz album of all time to this very date. His brother Nat was a well-accomplished trumpeter. So both of them
In fact, Nat Adderley performed here at WLRN several times with Alice Day when we used to do
By the way, their parents wanted him
Excuse
both to
me. What did you just say?
Their parents wanted them both to become attorneys.
All right. But Nat Adderley played here with Alice Day during Blues Pop and Beyond.
Oh.
Yep.
I remember engineering that program. All right, Bill, thanks for
Wait,
your call.
Bill, do you have a question?
No, you're out of time. But thanks for throwing out that question. Appreciate
okay.
it.
Thank you,
thanks.
Bill.
Okay, now we have somebody who's going to get the tennis center.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
I hope. Sharon in Little Gables.
Hi, the tennis center was Henderson Park off of 12th Avenue across from Victoria Hospital.
Absolutely, yes. Positively. It's still around today, but it's a truncated park compared to what it was. But you're so right. Name for a mayor, Parker Henderson, who died in the mid-1920s.
Right, and if you had any scrapes while you were having a match, you could go over to Victoria Hospital, which is now an assisted living center.
Absolutely, that's great.
Do you have a question?
Yes. At one time, one of the TV stations owned a chain of theaters.
Yes, that was Wilmeco.
That's
And Wilmeco owned Channel 4 also.
That's correct. You got it right on the nose. Okay, thanks again.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Before the program, I was talking to Paul and Bonnie and told them about, I guess in the 70s, I was on a flight from Washington, D.C. to Miami and sat next to Colonel Wolfson. It was a very interesting couple hours to talk to him. Mm. Such a pioneer.
Yeah, I bet.
Let's try...
We don't have too many questions out. We have, Joe, your question. Since Florida was explored by Europeans, it's flown under the flags of three nations. What famous treaty returned Florida to Spain in 1783? And Dr. George, what was Satchel Paige's contribution to the Miami Marlins' victory in perhaps the only baseball game played in the Orange Bowl in August of 56?
Let's go to Dr. George's home turf. What two Miami communities were the forerunners of what we now loosely called Little Havana? That's number nine. Paul and his lovely wife have a very nice home in that area. What two Miami communities were the forerunners of what we now loosely call Little Havana? And now let's go to Rob in Fort Lauderdale.
Hello, yeah, I think it was the Treaty of Ghent.
No.
Mm. Oh!
That was the War of 1812, but that's okay.
Really?
Hey, you're in Europe, that's the main thing.
Okay, yeah, Treaty of Versailles then. No.
Close.
That was World War One.
Close, though.
Okay, thanks. Let's move along to Tom in Margate. He was going to keep shooting there.
Yeah.
Tom in Margate, hi.
Hi. I'll continue that same question. It was the Treaty of Paris that ended the Revolutionary War.
Right.
Very good.
I think it was also known as the Peace of Paris.
Right.
Who negotiated for the not U.S. there, Paul?
Benjamin Franklin was there.
Right.
Thomas Jefferson was there. A guy named Lauren was there. They had a really all-star cast, and we got a great treaty because that treaty gave the United States its independence.
Right.
And what question we have? I have what two Miami communities were the forerunners of what we now loosely call Little Havana? Can anybody call us up with that answer?
And
everyone on our board right now wants to talk about the treaty which we got.
Okay, so we also
I do have
Paris.
A question.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, good. Okay.
This is a radio question, actually. Bob Green was one of the most popular DJs in the late '60s and.
Even earlier.
On WINZ.
Mm-hmm.
And his theme song was Moon Over Miami. But I'd like to know what recording of Moon Over Miami that was.
Oh, boy. Well, there were, as you've mentioned, or you've hinted, there were numerous recordings. The first was in the mid-1930s, and it was the number one song in America. And then a movie came out by that name in the early 40s, and they used a different recording.
Nat Cole recorded it also.
Right, and I believe on this show, Joe, we've used that before.
That Nat Cole one.
So I'm going to defer to my very erudite friend, Joe Cooper, on that.
Actually, I would have to go to my erudite friend, Ed Bell, on that.
Right. There have been several
Which
versions.
Which recording? Wait, do you know the answer?
Ray Charles had a great recording.
I don't. I thought it was Eddie Duchin, but I'm not sure.
Tom, if you ask a question, you're supposed to know the answer.
No, he was trying to get the answer. He was trying to find out.
Wow.
Well, we'll have to get Ed Bell to answer that for us.
There's a great Ray Charles version, Tom.
Yeah,
that's the one we play a lot.
Yeah, I remember choral voices.
Not Nat Cole.
Yeah.
I remember women's voices singing the chorus on it.
Okay.
So, however, I'd really like to find that out sometime.
Okay, we'll work on it.
All right, we'll work on it. Thank you.
And Paul, it's Tom Wallen from Curly.
Oh, Tom, how you doing?
Just fine.
Great.
Terrific. Great show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're nearly...
Bye-bye.
We're close
Bye-bye.
To the end of the program. It doesn't have a calendar, so you think what?
We have to give the answers because we want to talk about Paul's
Okay, quickly,
tours,
right.
Let's
see if...
Yeah, I'd love to.
Greg and Coral Gables, what's your answer for Little Havana?
All right, this is just a guess that I think Shenandoah, would that be half of the answer?
That's half of it.
Hey, all right, and I'll just wait for the other one because I'm totally stumped. And I called earlier but hung up after the East Coast Fisheries was answered. I knew that one.
We're short on time.
One interaction there with a rat.
It's Riverside.
Riverside.
Oh, Riverside, cool. On the East Coast Fisheries, can I very quickly tell you
about
my one interaction
with a rat?
We're
completely out of time.
Okay, very good.
Very good.
Take care. Good work.
Thank you. Bonnie
certainly...
Wait, I get to do the answer on this, which is my pleasure. What was Satchel Paige's contribution to the Miami Marlins' victory and perhaps the only baseball game played in the Orange Bowl in August of 1956? Can I say it?
Absolutely.
Two hits, three RBIs, and more than seven innings of one-run pitching.
Right.
Great question. Amazing player. Okay.
Well, he was 51 years old at the time.
That's another.
And there were more than 57,000 people in the Orange Bowl for that game.
Okay, we have to run. Thanks for listening to our history quiz. Thanks to friend and colleague Dr. Paul George and co-host Bonnie Berman. She made sense of it all for us. Our program is produced by Richard Ive, technical direction from Paul Leary. He's the online producer of the Topical Currents Facebook page and our portion of the website, WLRN.org. Leave us a like or a comment. Tomorrow we check out an upcoming symposium on mindfulness. It's an all-day event at the University of Miami on October 18th. I'm probably beyond help, but kids and adults can be trained to be more mindful. This is Joseph Cooper for Bonnie Berman. Thanks for listening. Here and Now is next from NPR News.